I think we're going to jump ahead a couple centuries today and talk about the Mahalich of the Baal Shem Tov. Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov was, as you all know, the founder of Chassidus, and many of his teachings, of course, became accepted by Chassidim. But also, one of the things we'll see today is the extent to which his teachings have spread well beyond Chassidim. The Baal Shem Tov and his perspective on Hashgacha, as we'll see, is one of the most widely accepted matter that he presents. As we'll see, according to the Baal Shem Tov, Hashgacha extends to basically everything, even the manner in which a branch falls from a tree. Let's take a look at a couple of sources where we see this. If you look at the third and fourth source, we'll see today. The Baal Shem Tov himself wrote very little. We have a couple of his letters. But most of what we have from the Baal Shem Tov is from the writings of his disciples who wrote down his teachings. Some of the writings are earlier, some of them are later. It's always interesting to consider that, and many of his disciples took different paths. I don't think any of that's particularly relevant for us today. So here's just a couple of formulations. Ha'adam, so here we're reading from the Imre Pinchas. Ha'adam tzarch lahamin shafilu kash hamunach al ha'aretz u'begzeiras Hashem Yisbarach shegazar lios munach sham ve'ani shamati kemedume b'zeh alashon sheyesh hashkacha pratis eich temunachas im haktsavos lakan u'lakan. So you see a piece of straw on the floor as you're walking. There's hashkacha. Not just that it would be here, but how it would be here, how it would be placed, and the like. Another source, this is from Rav Nachum Mendel from Vitebsk. V'hine be'emes rachok mirishayim v'yafik libam lahamin hashkacha pratis kazu, she'en adam noki fetzbo, ve'en shum esev nakar, ve'en shum even nizrak, ki im bizman uv'makom haroi lo. So we know Chazal already told us, Ein adam nokif etzba'o elim ken machrizin alav milamala, that if a person even stubs their toe, that's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, what that means exactly, according to some of the Rishonim we discussed in the previous weeks, but certainly that statement in Chazal could be understood as saying that there's direct hashkacha if I stub my toe. Probably the simplest understanding of that statement is that. But of course, that's a human being stubbing their toe. And here we see that he extends this to everything, to stones and the like. He quotes a pasuk from Koheles, Mekom shipol ha'etz, sham yehu, which means wherever a tree will fall, there it remains, implying that there's hashkacha even in the way in which the tree falls. Now, I'm not aware of any Rishonim who take this approach. Maybe I'm wrong. There are a number of Rishonim who adopt an all-encompassing perspective on hashkacha with respect to humans. In other words, as opposed to, let's say, the Rambam and even the Ramban, who indicate that sometimes human beings don't experience all-encompassing hashkacha. There are certainly Rishonim who do articulate that human beings experience all-encompassing hashkacha. Again, two Rishonim where presumably you see this. The first one on the top of your page is from the Sefer Chinuch. Mishor Shei HaMitzvah, this is discussing the Isser of Nekama. So why is Nekama wrong? Sheyeda adam v'yitein alibo ki kol asher yikra mitov adra hu siba shetavo elav me'eis Hashem Baruch Hu umyad adam umyad ish achiv lo yad davar bilti ritzon Hashem Baruch Hu alkein kshitzarehu oyach ivehu adam yeda benafsho ki avonosav garmu v'Hashem Yisbarach gazor alav bekach. So somebody goes ahead and they hurt my feelings, or they hit me, or the like. So I should understand that that happened. They only succeeded in doing this. Hashem isn't denying their free will, but they only succeeded in doing this because Hashem wanted it to happen, because I'm deserving of this. So it doesn't make any sense for me to take nekama against them. As Yosef, for example, says to his brothers, why, you know, I'm not angry at you, because this is from Hashem. Kilu mechia shalachani, Hashem sent me for a purpose, a goal, so I'm not angry at you. And that's what the Sefer Chinuch's writing, along similar lines, the Chovos Salvavos, the second size, source over here. Ofanea yosher bebitachon al elokim b'cho inin mehen, sheyash leches nafsho bahem lahalichos hagozer. Asher gazar lo habore mehem v'tibatach nafsho belokim yisbarach v'yeda. So here the Chovos Halvavos is explaining the midav bitachon, and it demands a person recognizing that everything that happens in their life is from Hashem. Ki lo yigmar lo mehem elama shekadem b'das habore, anything that happens to me is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shehu hanachon l'inyanav v'olam hazeh v'olam haba v'yosher tov l'achariso v'shan. Moreover, shen hanhaga saborei v'kulam shave'ein l'shem birya v'am etzev v'lo hanhaga ela b'rshuso v'gzeiraso v'dino. Right, so first of all, everything Hashem does is with justice and for my good, and even the free acts of other people are all a result of Hashem wanting this to happen to me. Skip a little later where it's underlined. V'adom lezeki adam afal pisha kitzo midas yamav kshurim b'gzer sabor yisbarach yeshal adam lezgalgal lesibo sachayim abachol mishta malvush kfitz archo lo yaniach azeh al alokim. Now, even though everything comes from Hashem Baruch Hu, doesn't mean I shouldn't do ishtadlos. They say chova v'ishtadlos. But you shouldn't think that the chovah of ishtadlus implies that that the what happens to me relates to the ishtadlus. It's a chovah of ishtadlus. The chovah of ishtadlus even continues and assumes that a person can't even kill themselves unless Hashem wished them to die. Perhaps not like the famous Tysus in Eilu Nairos. So here we see a couple of Rishonim. Again, adopting a all-encompassing perspective with respect to Hashgacha in terms of humans, but I'm not aware of a Rishon that takes this approach to everything in the world. In fact, interestingly enough, the Sefer HaChinuch says that there is such a view, but it's a non-Jewish view and against the Torah. That's the Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Kuf Samach Tes. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim 3:17 also cites such a view. He attributes it to a certain sect of Muslim philosophers, but he says it's not the view of the Torah. So as we've seen, though, the Baal Shem Tov is actually tell you the we'll see maybe a little later. The Lubavitcher Rebbe declares whether that fourth view ascribed by the Rambam is the same view as the Methuselites, is the same view as the Baal Shem Tov, or perhaps it's a little different. But as I said, as far as I know, this perspective isn't found in Rishonim. That Hashgacha applies to everything. So I'd like to take a look at really the analysis of the Lubavitcher Rebbe on this perspective of the Baal Shem Tov. I want to thank Avram for sending me this Mar Makom. This is from, as you see over here, Igros HaKodesh. Is a letter that the Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote. They're not exactly sure the date that it was written, but it was sometime before the year Tafshin Gimel. And it was a letter written to a Talmud Chacham It was a letter written to Rav Dov Ber Rivkin. Rav Rivkin apparently had asked the Rebbe to explain the Baal Shem Tov's perspective on Hashgacha and how it differs from previous thinkers. We're not going to read the entire letter, and just I picked out a couple of interesting points. But you can, if anyone wants to read it, I have it up here, the whole letter, both in the original Hebrew as well as a translation into English. So the Rebbe starts off by summarizing the Baal Shem Tov's opinion along the lines of what we just said. Again, you see here over here where it says Igros HaKodesh, Chelek Aleph. Hashgacha pratis b'chol prat uprat mimemoros adam v'gam datzach, that's domem, tzomeach, and chai. So Hashgacha pratis is with respect to every occurrence, as we've seen, whether it's inanimate matter and plants and animals. One objection to this approach are a number of psukim. We saw some of them quoted by the Ramban and the Rambam, as well as statements in Chazal, Shir Shim Rabbah, there's a Zohar, which indicate that Hashgacha is not evenly divided, that there's a higher level of Hashgacha, let's say, on the Tzadikim versus Beinonim. So how would the Baal Shem Tov deal with those sources? So he answers that the Baal Shem Tov didn't deny that there's a difference, but he did deny, but he did maintain that there's Hashgacha Pratis with respect to everything. Chalukim be'ofen Hashgacha, avalo be'pratiosa, l'shitas ha-Baal Shem Tov, ma'she'en kein l'shitos shekadmuhu. V'lo od, ela shekula medabrim na'alos bashkacha kolpanim neis melubash. So, according to the Baal Shem Tov, as opposed to the approaches that preceded him, the difference involves, not sure how to translate this exactly, the manner in which his providence is manifest, but not the fundamental premise that Hashgacha applies to everything in particular. And he notes that it relates basically to the differences in which the Hashgacha is perceived or the way in which it's enclosed in nature. Meaning to say, while the Baal Shem Tov maintained that every single thing is subject to Hashgacha, that's not something that most people notice. Obviously, most people attribute the types of things that happen in the world for the most part either to the laws of nature or to randomness or the like. So the hashgacha of tzaddikim might be less hidden than the hashgacha of other things. In fact, we detected that point in the Ramban as well, though perhaps to a lesser degree. So the hashgacha is less hidden, but on a fundamental level, there's no difference. The shmira is greater for tzaddikim, but again, on a fundamental level, that there's hashgacha equally for everything, there's no difference. And the psukim that Eini Hashem El Yireyav might indicate, again, a higher level of hashgacha in the sense of more manifest, but not that it is a actually fundamentally higher level of hashgacha. Now, a number of other contemporary thinkers adopt this approach that really there is no such thing as teva at all. Teva is an illusion. It's a description of the things that happen frequently. When we perceive apples falling from the tree as opposed to floating up in the air, so we characterize that phenomenon as nature, or we call it the law of gravity, but in reality, it's nothing more than a description of observations that I or that people have observed in the past. On a fundamental level, there's no difference. Scientists go ahead and observe phenomenon and come up with rules that describe those phenomenon, but they're not laws of nature. They are descriptions of past events. Take a look at, we'll see a description of this Mahalich in Rav Dessler, and then maybe in the Chazon Ish. We'll go back to the Reb in a second. Take a look here from Michtav Meliyahu, Chela Gimel. You have it towards the bottom of the sheet. Netzayir Nalanu, Ilu Rainu Kever Asher Hameis Shenik Barbo, Kvar Nechal Kol Besaro Viyia Le'afar. Vihine La'at, מעומק הקבר מסחיל לצמוח גוף אדם ועולה דרך הקרקע. והקבר נפתח ויוצא אדם חי ככל החיים. Let's say we noticed the common occurrence that people are buried and then they begin to decompose and then they begin to recompose and with time then emerge from the ground. And we observe this phenomenon frequently. Ma yinu omrim lezeh? So what would we say about this? Ha'im ein zeh neis gadol shel tchias ha'meisim? That's of course the great miracle of tchias ha'meisim. Vimkein, lama lo nafchin b'neis zeh gam betruah? Hanisras baretz. We know that every time you plant a seed, this is exactly what happens. You throw a seed into the ground, it begins to decompose, then it begins to grow, and finally it sprouts from the ground. V'azera nirkav l'gamri, v'achar kach maschil itzmoach, mitoch harikavon, ha'im, ein ze neis shel tchias ha'meisim ma'amish, b'li hefresh, b'vadei kenu, aval hefresh, shel tchias ha'meisim shel anashim lo'ur galnu. So what's the difference between tchias ha'meisim of a person and tchias ha'meisim that takes place when you plant a seed? One is that we're used to, and one is that we're not used to. V'tchias ha'meisim shel atfuah hur galnu, ilu ayinu regilim lehefech, if we were used to the opposite, people recomposing as opposed to seeds, hayinu korim l'tchias ha'meisim shebeis ha'kvarus tava, then we would have called tchias ha'meisim in the cemeteries nature, l'tchias ha'meisim shebezraim hayinu korim neis, and then the tchias ha'meisim of the seed, we would have called that a neis. There's no difference fundamentally. Aval emes hi ki ein b'teva l'neis, bein teva l'neis klum, there's no difference between teva and neis, hakol neis hu kol ha'olam kulo, Ein lo shum siba zulas ritzono yisborach. Nothing happens other than a ritzon Hashem. What is teva? Skip to the bottom where it's bolded. Hateva eno b'mitzius klal. There's no such thing as teva. El arak kachizas einayim la'adam. It's a subterfuge. It's like sleight of hand, what magicians do. Shia lo makom litos v'gam livchor b'emes. That leaves a person the ability to either err and deny God's existence or his hashkacha, or to accept the truth. Meaning to say that he understood that scientists observe phenomenon and offer explanations. But what happens? A scientist observes a phenomena. So if it happens enough, so either they'll come up with an explanation, generally speaking after the fact. There are some predictive aspects, but or alternatively they'll say, you know, look at this is happening and we don't know why nature is such that this happens. There are all sorts of things that science as of yet doesn't have the ability to explain. So scientists of course are confident it's nature and are usually confident that they will one day be able to explain it. But Rav Dessler's writing that really everything is Ratzon Hashem, and teva is the means by which a person can deny this providence. Along similar lines, read this. This is a letter from the Chazon Ish. Kimash anukorm teva hamechuvan bezer ratzon hayoser matmid shel hamehaver al havayos yisborach. What we call teva is what happens frequently. The Chazon Ish in the Perek Beis of Emunah Bitachon is describing what Emunah and Bitachon means. The context here is important, though not for us now. The Chazon Ish writes that Bitachon doesn't mean believing everything is going to turn out good. Sometimes things don't turn out good. What is Bitachon? In Yana Bitachon, who? Ha'imun she'en mikre ba'olam. That the belief that there is no such thing as mikra. V'chol anasa tachas hashamesh hakol b'achrazas meito yisborach. Everything that happens is b'achrazas Hashem. So going back to the Baal Shem Tov, the Baal Shem Tov says that there is no such thing as teva. Now we have to address a more fundamental question, which is, what is the purpose of this all-encompassing providence? When you look at the Rishonim, especially the Rambam, one of the reasons why they deny the all-encompassing providence is because what purpose would it serve? In other words, the Rambam didn't believe that Hashem couldn't be actively involved in everything. Ayat Hashem Tikzar, of course he could, but why would he? The Rambam notes that the Nevi'im were astounded that there's even providence with respect to people. Kol Shekain, there wouldn't be providence with respect to animals. Why would there be a need? So the Rambam understands that with respect to people who are Bali Bechira, so then there's Hashgacha with respect to animals, and certainly even lower forms of existence where there is no Bechira, so there's no need. There's no need for Hashem to be involved directly. Instead, Hashem sets up a system of nature. So what would the Baal Shem Tov say about this? So here, the Rebbe quotes an essay entitled Al Kein Yomru, which alludes to the answer. So here we have, continuing where we left off, Inyan, again, towards the top of the page, or really the middle of the page, Inyan Hashgacha Pratis, right in the middle. Inyan Hashgacha Pratis Shemivar Moreinu Habesht Delo zulava dechol prate tnuos hanivraim leminem heim bashkacha pratis meabaris barach bashkacha pratis al zu he chios hanivra vikiumo. It's not just that there is hashkacha, but the hashkacha is the basis of the existence. Since Hashem created everything yishmiayin, there is no existence other than through Hakadosh Baruch Hu's directly willing it to exist. Ela deodzos de tnua pratis Dinivra prati hare yesh la yachas klali laklalos kavana sabriya tnua achas shel desha prati mashlim hakavana halyona binyan abriya. So what's he saying over here? The providence is the life energy of the created being, and it maintains its existence, and it has a connection to the intent of the creation of the whole, right? So even the slightest movement of a piece of grass is a fulfillment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent in the Bria. Meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a plan. Everything serves a purpose in that plan. Now, I think we've seen in the past what the Rambam writes in the Akdama to Mishnayos, that nothing was created for naught, and everything has a purpose in God's plan, and moreover, even said that with respect to humans. So the Rambam writes that with respect to species, meaning to say no animal was created without a purpose, and every animal exists for the purpose of man. I might see this funny colored frog in a rainforest, and I might not know why it exists, and I might wonder what possible purpose it exists for, but I could be sure that it does exist for a purpose. But the Rambam said that with respect to why was this beautiful multicolored frog created. But the Baal Shem Tov is saying, well, it's also true with respect to every time it croaks. Now, obviously, I won't be able to figure out why this frog croaking at this particular time is valuable or serves a purpose or the like, but that's not surprising. It's not reasonable to expect a person to be able to figure out every detail of God's plans. We're finite, we're limited. We're living within it as opposed to outside of it. So just like the Rambam says, you don't know why this multicolored frog was created, but you could be sure it was created for a purpose. So the Baal Shem Tov says, you don't know why this multicolored frog is croaking now, but you could be sure it's croaking for a purpose. Everything exists as part of the plan. Why, therefore, should we limit the scope of providence? Why would we limit the scope of God's plans? Why not assume that God would ensure that every detail and even the smallest details of the world are perfectly suited at every instance for God's plans? This is Lahavdil. But nowadays they have very sophisticated computer games and with all sorts of details, right? So if all those details are happening, you could be sure that they were there for the purpose. What was the purpose? Whatever purpose the game's creator had. So obviously the level of complexity of the world is enodoma, and God's knowledge and planning is certainly enodoma. And therefore, it all serves a purpose. So that's one point. Now the Rebbe also says something else, which another type of reason relates to the sugi we learned last year for the all-encompassing level of hashkacha. Alamukubale manal kevan de beinyan hagilgul yesh shemiz galgalin bedatzach l'chora barur shabedatzach ka'elo yesh bem hashkacha pratis. So because according to Mekubalim, souls are reincarnated even in inanimate objects, even in plants, even in animals. So too, the fate of those individual inanimate objects is also subject to hashgacha. Now, I don't know what this means. Last week we saw that the idea of Gilgul Neshamos is a great Kabbalistic secret. We can't really even understand what it means with respect to Gilgul Neshamos into humans, Kal Vachomer into inanimate objects. But there were Mekubalim that he's referring to that understood that Gilgul Neshamos applies not just into other humans, but also into inanimate objects. And therefore, it makes sense that there should be Hashgacha with respect to them as well. Meaning to say, ironically, from a philosophical perspective, this actually brings the Baal Shem Tov's approach closer to the Rambam, insofar as they're both acknowledging that Hashgacha Pratis is human-focused. The difference is that the Mekubalim are saying that that there's a human element, whatever exactly that means, to even these inanimate objects. Now, as we saw in the earlier paragraph, and this is very important, the Rebbe does not... before we get there, actually. He also notes there's other fundamental agreement between the Rishonim and the Baal Shem Tov. For example, even the Baal Shem Tov maintains that only humans have free will, and moreover, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Hashgacha, as encompassing as it is, somehow is compatible with free will. We've discussed how that could be earlier, but it is. So he's not saying that this all-encompassing Hashgacha limits a person's freedom. And the Rebbe cites the Rambam's position in Hilchos Tshuva, which we saw earlier, that even though people freely choose what to do, that is Ratzon Hashem, because Hashem wants them to have that freedom. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, as we saw in the above paragraph, the Rebbe does distinguish between the Baal Shem Tov's approach and those that preceded him. In other words, he doesn't try to deny that the Baal Shem Tov's approach was radical. He doesn't try to read it into the Rambam or the Rishonim. He cites several passages in this letter. I didn't copy them for you, from the Mor Nevuchim, where he first articulates what the Rambam's position is, and other earlier thinkers, and shows how the Baal Shem Tov's approach is different. He quotes a sefer called Shomer Amunim, which argued that even the earlier Kabbalistic approaches don't take this Mahalich of the Baal Shem Tov, though I think he does maintain that Chazal held of it, and he shows that it could be seen in Psukim as well. But this raises a very, very important question, which is, how do we explain this radical departure with respect to Hashgacha? In other words, we know usually we look to Rishonim to understand Torah, and it's not very common that you'll have a situation where the Achronim have a totally different Mahalich in something than the Rishonim. So how do we explain this this transformation? So the Rebbe deals with this in a different letter. I didn't give this to you, but this is from Likutei Sichos. It's volume 15, page 281. And the Rebbe basically says that there are two explanations why Chassidus was revealed to later generations as opposed to earlier generations, if the earlier generations were really on a much greater madrega. Quotes the famous statement of Chazal, if they are like Malachim, we're like Bnei Adam. If they're like Bnei Adam, we're like Chamorim. Right? So if the Rishonim, if the Kadmonim were much greater than us, why is it that the ideas of Chassidus, which are true and so fundamental, were not revealed to them, but revealed to us? Us meaning the Baal Shem Tov and his disciples. So he gives two answers to this. The first one was that that basically in the area, in the time of the Ikvus of the Mashiacha, it's necessary to tap into a higher light which enables us to overcome the darkness. Meaning to say, as the world becomes darker and darker before it reaches the conclusion, HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to allow us to see certain lights to be able to survive. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, there's a hashkacha, not just in the way in which what happens in the world in terms of, you know, falling and scraping my knee, but there's also hashkacha in the manner in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals Chachma to the world. And this is something that could be seen throughout our history. Certain tkufos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed different true things in the secular world. Look at the scientific revolution, or look at the great apprehensions of wisdom that took place in the ancient world by the Greek philosophers or the like. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is reasons why at certain times it's important to allow us to discover certain true things. That could be in the realm of music, it could be in the realm of art, and certainly it's going to be true in the realm of Chachma. So there were developments by Rishonim that weren't understood earlier, whether it's the Mahalich of the Bali Atosfos, or the Chachmei Sfarad, or the like. And likewise, in the realm of Nistar, so there were Giluyim to Shem Bar Yochai, there were Giluyim to the Arizal, and these happened at certain times for certain reasons. And, you know, the fact that Rab Chaim was built off of earlier Torah as well, but there was something new there. It wasn't just more of the same. And for whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Torah to develop in this particular way, at this particular time, and he allowed that light to come. And the same thing is true with Chassidus, the Rebbe is saying, and especially saying that this relates to the fact that we're coming closer to the times of Mashiach. He quotes the idea, you know, we say in the Zmiros, Toa Me'achaim Zachu, which means that the Magen Avraham even quotes this idea to some degree, that on Erev Shabbos we're supposed to taste the taste of Shabbos foods. I don't think that means you're supposed to like eat your kugel on Erev Shabbos and so you're going to Shabbos full. But an idea that even before Shabbos you have a taste of Shabbos food. So even before Mashiach, the world is 6,000 years, corresponding to the 6 days of creation, followed by Shabbos, and likewise we have a taste of Shabbos even in the late afternoon on Erev Shabbos, just like we taste the Shabbos food on Erev Shabbos, and therefore the Torah of Chassidus should be understood in that realm. Hashem is giving us a taste of the Torah that will be revealed, Lasid Lavo B'Yemos HaMashiach, and he's giving us a taste of it in a time of darkness, but at a time right before the great light is revealed. And that's how to understand why many ideas in the Pnimius of Torah are revealed, let's say, in the last several centuries. Those are the two explanations. Again, the first explanation is Dafka, because it's so dark we need more light. And the second explanation is as we're coming closer to the light, we have a taste of that light. And you notice it's actually interesting that these two explanations reflect two extremes, right? In the first explanation, Chassidus is being revealed in the later generations Dafka because of their lower level. Because of their lower level, they need this light to survive. And the second is because it's a reflection of the Chassidus and a unique perspective at its present time, that late Friday afternoon we could already appreciate the foreshadowing of the Giluyim of Yemos HaMashiach. So that's part A of today's shiur. Part B, I want to talk specifically about Hashgacha with respect to animals. We've already seen the Baal Shem Tov refer to this, and here we have an interesting insight in terms of Chazal and the Rishonim. So, if you can turn to the sheets that I gave you last time, the ones with the two columns, where it says on the bottom left, if somebody doesn't have it, I stole some extra copies from last week up here. So the bottom left, in terms of Hashgacha v'Baalei Chayim. So we'll start with a Radak. This is on the bottom left. The context. We'll see in a moment that there's a basis for this in Rishonim as well. Chazal as well. First we'll start with the Radak. This is from Sefer Malachim. You remember the story about how the Navi goes to the northern kingdom from the southern kingdom. Hashem tells him to come right back, go back in a different way, don't eat anything when you're there. On his trip home, and Navi Sheker finds him. Tells him he is a valid Navi. He tells him to come eat with him. And he listens. He trusts that he's a Navi. But because he violated the Dvar Hashem, he is eaten by a lion. And then it says that Lo achal ha'aryeh yasanavei lav lo shavar sachamor. The lion does not miraculously eat him. Or even eat the or maul the donkey. So how do we understand this? And specifically, how do we understand why it is that the lion lo shavar es hachamor? Why didn't it rip up the donkey? So let's take a look. Lo achal asa nevela. Why didn't the lion eat the nevela? Al derech v'sagar pum aryusa. Aval hargo laonash shamar ki Hashem v'hine hara lanu b'zeh gemul ha-tzadik v'on shok ke'achas ba'olam hazeh v'chein gemul ha-chamor ba'olam hazeh l'chvod ha-navi sh'rachav alav ki yesh gemul v'onash b'shar ba'al echayim ba'olam hazeh b'inyin ha-adam. So here he writes that there is gemul v'onash for animals, but he also writes b'inyin ha-adam. In other words, this might not be a particularly significant. We know, for example, the pasuk says, "V'ish ki tain asher yitain shchavto b'vheimah mos yumas v'esa behema tarogu." Why do we kill the animals? So Rashi there explains, quoting from Chazal, I believe, that we kill the animal not because the animal's a baal bechira is even deserving of an onesh, but because of the kavod towards a human. Since a human was killed due to the animal, it would be a disgraceful for a human, who's a tzelem elokim, to have been killed while this animal goes on living. Rashi says a similar thing in terms of why Bilam's donkey is killed, so that people won't say that this was the donkey that chastised Bilam. Perhaps a more telling source in the Radak could be seen in the next source. This is in the top left, top right of page 2. A very fascinating makor. So this is going on the pasuk that we all know. Posiach zedach masbil cholchai ratzon tzadik Hashem b'chol derachav v'chassid b'chol ma'asav. So the pesukim are telling us about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kindness, that he feeds even animals. The Radak explains ki b'tzedek v'yosher nosein l'chol achad ochlo v'afal pi shachai torif es achai v'ochlo. So there are actually a lot of psukim to this effect about how Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of the need, the hunger of animals, but you might be bothered, right? Because also they're ripped up, right? Look, we say, look at Hashem's great kindness. He provides food to the animals. Yeah, well, how does he provide food to the lion? He lets the lion eat the gazelle. Very nice for the lion, but what about the gazelle? So he writes, nevertheless, he gives a less dramatic example, the mouse for the cat. V'chein ha'aryeh, v'adov, v'anamer, v'shar chayos, ha'ochlos, chayos, ha'cheros. V'chein b'me'ufafim, ha'ofos, ha'darsim, ofos, ha'cherim. Birds eat birds. Ha'kol tzedek me'ito. We should understand that this is all tzedek. It's all just. Ki gam l'chayos. Right, so I would have said, based off of the Rishonim we saw in the previous week, so you know that there's hashgacha klali for the animals. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes sure that the min isn't wiped out, even though he allows cats to eat lots of mice. He makes sure that mice don't go extinct. But we're not going to say that you know that there's hashgacha on Jerry. Right. So kigam l'chayos v'lofos hanetrafim nosin lam gam ken machalam b'chayev. So first of all, it's not true. First of all, Hashem makes sure that Jerry, as long as Jerry's supposed to live, he gets plenty of food. Elish b'giyak k'tzas kitzam l'maves. When the time for Jerry to die comes, it hasn't happened yet. He's been chased by Tom for, I don't know, 50, 60 years by now. But at some point, his point of expiration will arise. Gazar mikodem shetia misasam pamim banas chayim acherim. So Hashem will be gozer that sometimes he might just die of old age, and he might die because the Tom eats him. Upamim yigzer shiyamas misas atzmo. In other words, these are indications that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gozer. There's a ketz for a mouse, and how, you know, just like humans, you know, while a human's alive, Hashem takes care that they should have food, and when it's time that they die, so mi b'chayo mi b'cherev. And he's saying a similar thing, seemingly with respect to animal. V'achad hu l'nitraf yamos misas atzmo o al yidei acher. Now, So even though he, it's very interesting, I'm not sure exactly what to do with this, but first the Radak presents this almost as a given, but now he acknowledges that this is actually Zemivucha G'dayla Bein HaChacham. In other words, there's a debate among the Chachamim exactly about the nature of Hashgach on animals. Ki mehem omrim ki kshetoreif ha'aryeh ha'keves v'dom elahem hu onesh ha'nitraf me'eis ha'kel yisbach. So some say taka. It is an onesh. When a particular sheep gets killed by the lion, that's an onesh. Shukadom ezel ma'atzatsi b'divrei razal. Reb Yochanan karave chazi shalach sheshol adagim me'ayam haya omer mishpatecha tom rabba. Right? One fish gets fished from the sea, he would say mishpatecha tom rabba, which I don't know if this is the only way to read that Gemara, but the Radak understands that Gemara, and that perspective in Chazal is saying that there's mishpat with respect to animals as well. So there's mishpat with respect to animals as well. Again, along the lines of what he just said. Umehem omrim, kiem gemul va'onesh b'chol minei achayim, el al adem bilvad, that presumably is the idea that we saw in the Rambam and the Ramban. We're going to take a pshara. Yesh gemul va'onesh l'shar minei bali chayim be'esek ha'adam. So there is gemul va'onesh, but only with respect to their interactions with humans. Kinei matzanu umiyad kol chaya edreshanu. What does that mean? Umiyad kol chaya edreshanu. That means if an animal takes a human life, I will punish that animal. Now, again, that seems to be true, even though I don't think he's claiming that animals have free will. V'nomar v'shod behemos yichi son. V'nomar begmul v'lo shavar es hachamur. The pasuk that we just saw before in that first radak. Pirshu razal gmul behemos kegon hachamur v'akalav. Ki amru razal manishtanu pitre chamoreyam b'chol behemos leftosam. Chazal say, why is it that we know that there's no mitzvah of pidyon for any behemah tameya, except, of course, for the chamor? Why should that be? Upirshu, lefisha tanu bizasam shall Yisrael's reward for their carrying bizas mitzrayim. V'nelmar, lekelav tashlichuno so, you're supposed to give nevela to a dog. B'schar, lo yachratz kelav leshono. Melamed, she'en HaKadosh Baruch Hu mekapech schar kol birya birya. Okay. Now, a source in Chazal for the notion that there's hashgach on animals could be found in the Yerushalmi that you have next on the right column. Very in Yana Dioma relates to Lag BaOmer. Alisof tlas asar shanin. So, at the end of 13 years, the 13 years that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was in the cave. Amar lina nafik chame makala alma nafik v'yasev le alpumadir ma'arasa chada. Sorry, chama. Chad tzayid, tzayid tziporin, praras mitzudase. So, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai leaves his cave and he sees a bird approaching a bird trap. Shama bas braskala, here's a baskal, amra dimos. The baskal says, Dimos. And when that happens, Vishtizva tzipor, Amar tzipor mi bilade shmaya lo yivda, kol shekein barnash. So he says meaning to say, if the baskal said, spikula, so then the bird would be trapped. And if it's demos, it would go free. And what does that mean? So he says Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, if a bird will not be trapped unless that's a gzeira from Hashem, so certainly I won't be trapped. So therefore, it's okay for me to leave this cave. I'm going to be safe. If I'm not going to, if the Romans aren't supposed to get me, I won't be gotten. Little different than the Bavli version of the story, where Eliyahu says that the Kesar died. That was actually after 12 years. After the 13th year, he left because Mishpat Rishon began him as Yud Beis Chodesh. But in the Yerushalmi's version, basically, Rishon Bar Yochai comes out, and he sees that there's hashkacha even with respect to birds, and he applies that to himself. So, certainly, this passage seems to support the notion that there's hashkacha even on animals. It's interesting, actually, if you look at the source that follows from Rav Yonos and Eibershitz in the Aris Dvash. So he says, "What was May Kara Mai Kasavar Levasov Mai Kasavar?" So he says that originally Rav Shimon Bar Yochai held like the Rambam that there's no hashkach on animals, and then he goes out and he discovers that there is hashkach on animals. He says that the way Rav Eibershitz puts it is he sees that the Ramban was right, not the Rambam. I'm not sure where in the Ramban he's referring to. But one way or the other, it's okay. So, the Ramban wasn't so off. He was mechaven to the Havamin of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. But ultimately, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai saw the correct mahalich was that there is hashkach on animals. Now, even if we read the source as saying that there's hashkach on animals, I think we could understand it in a number of ways. And it's not so clear-cut. We could take a more minimalist reading. First of all, the passage doesn't state that there's direct providence necessarily in a sense of divine involvement. Perhaps the Bas Kol is simply announcing the fate of the birds. Will it happen or will it not happen? That's different, perhaps, than Hashkacha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even according to the Rishonim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a limited level of hashgacha. I think almost all Rishonim, if not all Rishonim, agree that with respect to Yedia, there's absolute Yedia with respect to even the details of what happens in the world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, and maybe even announces it. Doesn't mean there's hashgacha. However, even if you assume that the Bas Kol does indicate that there is hashgacha, does indicate intervention, it doesn't indicate necessarily that intervention for the sake of the bird, but perhaps only for the sake of man, an idea that we saw in the Radak earlier. If you guys were around for when Rav Aaron was here on Shabbos, somebody asked him about the Baal Shem Tov's Mahalech on Hashkacha at the question-answer session. And Rav Aaron argued that that the debate is not as big as it would seem at first. Let's say my cow Daisy gets sick from eating too much dandelions. So it's not the pshat that Daisy gets sick, alts Daisy, because like we said, Daisy's not a Baal Bechira, and why would that matter? Rather, the pshat is that even if there is hashkacha vis-a-vis Daisy, it's because I own Daisy. And if Daisy gets sick, that has an effect on me. So likewise, we're talking here about hashkacha on the bird. It's not hashkacha on the bird, outs the bird. It's hashkacha on the bird, outs the trapper. Trapper's human. And this idea we saw a little bit in the Radak before, though he might have differing views. You see this, we'll see maybe in the Ramak. You have here below where it says Inyan Echad. Chada Yimtza Hashkacha Bebali Chaim Letzarch Adam Kigon Ha'akrav Shaya Mushkach La'avor Es Hamayim V'chulei V'akulis B'chatzi Yaderech Chiyote B'zeh Afilu Al Even Nesuna B'Rashana L'Hachshil Es Ha'adam V'chuyav V'akol Shlichus Kavo Mikan L'manu Shiyasa Kadosh Baruch Hu Shlichus Gam Aidei Akum V'heim Kebali Chaim V'chulei. So, when Daisy gets sick, it's a shlichus from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have some type of effect on the farmer, but not really alts Daisy. A thinker, a Hasidish thinker, where you see this, this is from the Divrei Chaim, the Sanz Rav. In the next source, Hagam sheharambam das acheres lo bezeh, aval be'emes lefi das chazal, afilu tzipur lo nitzod bilti hashkacha milamala ukufiya yadua shakol maisa bereishis hema b'shvil ha'adam. Veina adam bechlalo tzarech l'chol habruim v'gam shein yadu alanu eich uma aval emes ki ein mosaros bebriya. Right, everything in the world happens for a reason. There's nothing extra. Uma sheniru mosar gam hu le'ez etachlis l'tzarech adam. It has some purpose, l'tzarech adam kimivuar v'midrashim avuhuva bekamakomus bedvareinu. Aval akol tzarech adam, v'adam mushkach al kol evarav v'tzrachav bepratos, memela nishkach gam al evarav v'tzrachav bepratos, memela nishkach hakol al yado v'lo kasha kushyas harambam zal sham. In other words, the Rambam's kasha isn't a kasha, because the Rambam's kasha was assuming that it would be for the sake of animals, and he says, no, it's for the sake of man. So again, if we take this approach, then again, the sons of Rav is saying it's against the Rambam, but it's not so fundamentally different from the predominant view in the Rishonim. Hashkacha is for humans. Okay, the question is how far that goes. But there are a number of thinkers who reject this reading of the above Yerushalmi. And one of their arguments, this rejection is quoted by the Shomer Munim and other Sfarim, the Elima, in that letter from the Rebbe that we cited before. They say if this was the case, then the Bas Kol would not have been necessary to make a statement concerning a particular bird. Okay, would have been enough that, how many birds, is the trapper going to do well today? You know, Tuesday he'll come away with 6 birds, and Wednesday only 2 birds, and 4 birds on Friday. But the mashmos, he says, of the Yerushalmi is that this particular bird, so this leads to a more revolutionary reading of the Yerushalmi, that, again, there's direct hashkacha even on animals. And there is a very famous story, I guess we'll probably have to close with this, a very famous story. Again, this is from the Baal Shem Tov. This is how it's recorded in the Sefer Shomer Amunim, which we've seen quoted before. Shomer Amunim is written by Rav Aaron Roth. He's known as the Rav Arla. He lived from 1894 to 1947, and he was the famous founder of the Shomer Amunim, Hasidim, and the like. Okay, so let's take a look. Let's take a look at what he writes. A famous story. The story is a song. Some of you may have heard of. V'uvda haya pamachas bebutzina dinahura ila Rabbeinu Habesh zchunuso yagin aleinu shaya im talmid of the sado pitom aver al rega ruach hazak v'naflu kama alin laaret. So the Baal Shem Tov was going for a walk with his talmidim, and there was a wind, and a couple of leaves fell. The Amar bni Tedu shezeh ruach shavar achshav al rega hayabishvil to laas achas shehayse besof eze alei. There was a little worm at the end of one of the leaves. V'hayachama zorachas alei abiyoser, and this worm was being shined on with the sun. It wasn't comfortable. V'hayse tzoekes l'Hashem b'tzaakan, the worm was crying out to Hashem. V'shalach Hashem zeh ruach v'naflu kama alin l'aretz v'nafla gam hu imayim v'amar lahem zos laudia lahem go del hashkachas habari v'rachmanuso al kol biryan be'alma mamish mamish, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hashkacha on everything. Earlier sources of this idea, here's you could see from a passage from the Baal HaTanya, and other sources. We're out of time to see them inside exactly. The notion of hashgacha on animals might be seen not just in the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. Take a look here at the bottom source from Yael Orr from the Gain, where he also says it. He quotes that Yerushalmi. Again, whether it would fall under the first school of thought or the second school of thought, I'm not sure. But again, we see in Chazal a number of sources, and even in some Rishonim, and certainly in Achronim, the notion of hashkacha on animals. And again, whether we go as far as the Baal Shem Tov or not, there's no question that there's been a transformation, a transition, an evolution, a revolution, in terms of understanding Hashgacha. And most contemporary thinkers we've seen today in the Baal Shem Tov and the Chazon Ish, you could see it in Rav Dessler, and you could see it in many other thinkers, take for granted an all-encompassing approach to Hashgacha. And part of it might relate to the waning influence of Greek philosophy, which might have something to do with some of the hesitation of some of the Rishonim in terms of Hashgacha. And now there's really no reason not to assume an all-encompassing Hashgacha. But I think really it is something that goes much more broad. And again, I'm sure there are still some rationalists around here and there, but among many, if not certainly the vast majority of contemporary Baalei Machshava, they do take for granted that certainly everything that happens to a person happens due to Hashgacha, and that and as such, a person should take that into account when considering the happenings in our life. But just to recall what we said last time, I happen to believe, and what I told you from Rav Tursky, which is that there's not that much of a nafkamina, because everybody agrees l'maisa, yisurin b'ayin li'adcha yifashvish b'maisa. Everybody agrees if on my way home I fall and trip and scrape my knee, that the reaction I have to have is tshuva. And whether that's because I believe it's direct hashgacha, then of course I have to do tshuva, Hashem is sending me a message, or because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending me a message by leaving me to teva, because I'm not connected to Him sufficiently, it's still true either way. And therefore, the halacha l'maisa that comes out of this is that we do have to live our lives with that perspective, that when things happen to us, we have to react, we have to take them into account, you have to be mefashvesh b'maisav. And I'm not saying there's no nafkamina between the different mahalchim, but I think for the most part, there's not a nafkamina. Okay, so we'll stop here. We have regular shiur next week. I think we have two more shiurim and then the final, is that correct? Or one more and then the bechina, to figure it out. Okay, I think two more shiurim and then the bechina. One more shiur after this. In other words, I think one more shiur next week is a regular shiur, and then I think in 2 weeks is the bechina. Okay, have a good Shabbos. I think